Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Rip searched me in disbelief. We were sitting at our usual bar in the two stools we always sat in. The same stools where I'd told him Vanessa and I were engaged, and the same stools where I'd told him she was pregnant. Twice. Now, I had just finished telling him Vanessa filed for divorce and bought a house down in Denver. Kyle Ripley, or Rip as I call him, has been my best friend since my first management job after college at Arby's, managing the fryer. Rip, a fellow grad and consumer of false promises, worked the drive-through line. We've been through just about everything together since then, although for some reason, Vanessa never really liked him. Rip whistled. So she's taking the kids to Denver. You gonna fight for custody? Nobody wants a fight, I said. We've already worked out an arrangement, but that brings me to some more bad news. I can't make the kids travel back and forth, Rip. I just can't. I'm moving to Denver, man. Staring at his beer, Rip bobbed and asked, "What the hell are you gonna do in Denver?" I shrugged. Still haven't quite figured that out, but she's already moving and I don't want the kids to be that far away, you know? "Yeah, I wouldn't either," Rip answered. He asked, "Where are you gonna live without a job? I mean, I've never met a divorcee who was flush with cash." I laughed far too loudly and caught a few irritated glances, then said, "No, I'm not exactly flush right now. Van and I agreed to a 50-50 split, but I didn't realize I would have to pay for a motel and half of the bills for the house." "Well," Rip said, "you're an idiot, but you're a good dad. I'll put out some feelers, see if I know anyone in the Denver area who can help." We parted shortly after. I went back to my lonely motel, and instead of sleeping, stared at the ceiling texture. Rip called me late the next morning. He told me he had learned an old friend from high school now owned a bunch of properties in Denver. Rip called the guy out of the blue and learned he apparently had a place outside of the city I could stay in until I got on my feet. I asked the obvious question, "What's the catch?" Rip sucked in a big breath, which said a lot before he even spoke. Yeah, so there's a pretty big catch, maybe. It might end up being nothing. I wouldn't worry too much about it until you're there." I said, "Come on, man, just give it to me straight." "Well, apparently there's a guy, a squatter, I guess, living in the house. My friend Will says you can stay there as long as you clear him out first." I thought Rip must be joking. He wasn't. "What about the cops?" I asked. "Can't they just arrest him for, I don't know, trespassing or something?" Rip said, Trust me, I tried to get more info from Will, but he was pretty vague. He says he's tried to get the cops to remove the guy, but every time they show up, they can't find him. Rip went on to explain the full situation. This old friend of his, Will, was in the process of renovating the house in question to turn it into a homestay rental. Will had apparently requested a quote to redo the roof, and that's when he was told about the squatter. The roofing guy reported seeing someone staring at him through the windows while he walked around the property. Will checked the cameras and he says he didn't see anybody. He went out there with the cops and... couldn't find anybody, I finished for him, remembering what he said earlier. Okay, so let's say the squatter is gone now. Why would this Will guy let me stay there for free? Rip said, he's too busy to oversee work on one single property outside of town. He wants somebody there to be like a liaison with the workers. After spending the afternoon considering the offer, I texted Rip, I'll bite. Tell your friend I can head down tomorrow. Rip texted back, that's the spirit. I'll miss you though, bud. Rip insisted we see each other once more before I left. He invited me to a coffee shop on my way out of town, and I showed up prepared for a simple send-off. But Rip had more to say than goodbye. This squatter thing is just not sitting well with me, man, Rip said. I want this to be a good thing for you, so I didn't say anything yesterday, but Will just sounded weird on the phone. I don't know why he would lie about anything. Well, I guess I kind of do, but anyway. He picked up an orange plastic bag he had brought inside with him and slid it across our table. It contained an Adidas shoebox. Oh, thanks, man, I said. Are these in case I need to run away from your buddy's place? Rip remained stoic. I partially opened the box, suspecting it might not actually contain shoes, then quickly shut it. All I had seen was the shiny end of a handgun's barrel pointed directly at my chest. I rotated it to point at the wall. Don't worry, it's not, you know, Rip said with a cautious glance around the shop. He whispered, I forgot to grab bullets. I don't want this, I lied. I didn't want the responsibility the gun came with, but I didn't hate the idea of taking a weapon into my mysterious situation. Rip said, then don't buy bullets and keep it locked up. I don't care. I just want you to have it in case things get ugly. Does Will know you're giving me this? I don't care, man, Rip groaned. He scratched his head. Look, I really wanted to help you out. That's the only reason I hit up Will. I hadn't talked to him in like 8 or 9 years. He was a bit of a weirdo in high school, but considering all of his recent success, I figured he sorted all that stuff out. I mean, he's a multimillionaire now. Exactly what kind of stuff did he need to sort out? I asked suspiciously. Oh, nothing alarming, Rip said hurriedly. He was just a bit of an outcast, a nerd, you know? He was into whatever everyone else wasn't. I remember he really liked to freak the Christian kids out with all this voodoo stuff, but I don't think he ever believed in it or anything. Sounds a bit like me, I laughed. Actually, yeah. Yeah, I could see that, I guess. I put the shoebox next to me in the booth. After drinking a final sip of coffee, I told Rip I would try to come back from time to time. We both pretended that would be satisfactory and went our separate ways as if nothing was changing. Rip sent me Will's number. We arranged a time to meet at the house so he could give me keys, but Will decided not to show up, if he ever intended to at all. He texted saying something important came up in the city, but that he left a key in the mailbox for me. That seemed like a strange thing to do with a trespasser around, but I did find a key in the mailbox at the end of the long driveway. I couldn't see the house through the trees along the street. The driveway cut through them and curved back into them. I can see why a squatter would pick this place, I thought. The empty house was about as secluded as it could be, so close to the city. I would classify the house itself as redneck chic. The yard and rusty tin roof were buried in golden pine needles. White paint hung in big peels from the siding, much of which had rotted. A gable vent sat crooked below the roof's pinnacle. I could see why Will thought it would eventually make a good homestay, though. From the front, the house looked deceptively small. It stretched out on the backside, almost like a second ranch-style home had been glued to it. From the backyard, if I looked through the trees, I saw a pretty nice view of the city, with mountains behind it. Put a hot tub out there and it would be the ideal place to relax with a few friends, and the Mile High City's favorite plant. I thought I had gotten very lucky. After exploring the yard and peeking into the house from outside, I thought the squatter might be a non-issue. Inside, I found no signs of habitation. Even the fridge and pantry were empty. The bed sheets were all folded in closets, and there were no clothes to be seen anywhere. I went back outside, missing the warm sun, and called Will.
"Hey, everything in order?"
he answered, businesslike. Sure, I got in okay. Hey, I haven't found anybody inside yet. What can you tell me about this squatter?"
"Who?"
Will asked, then immediately laughed.
"Oh, him. I didn't even realize Kyle passed that on. I kid him that you being there would scare the squatter off. If you haven't seen him yet, he probably left. I haven't been seeing him on any of the cameras."
"Oh, sorry," I said. "Rip, Kyle, I mean, he made it sound like my living here was conditional on me getting rid of the squatter."
"No, no,"
Will crowed. I could tell it was an act. He said,
"Hey, I should go if you don't need anything else. Text me if that guy comes back. I'll call the cops for you, okay? He won't even know they're coming. I bet he's gone, though."
"Yeah, I hope so," I said. "And thanks for the clarification, but real quick, what was that about cameras?" Will said,
"Don't worry, I'm not a creep, just a guy who likes to keep an eye on his properties. Just maybe don't walk around nude in the kitchen and living room, or outside. That's about all I can see."
"Got it," I said, turning to re-enter the house. I opened the front door. "Well, I'm really grateful for this. Let me know if there's anything I can..."
Yeah. "I've really got to go. Talk to you later."
Will hung up. I went back inside. A sound rumbled above me. I stood stone still and listened. A few seconds later, I heard the fan kick on and an air-conditioned breeze stroked the back of my neck. The noise was just one of the air ducts, a sound, I told myself, I would have to become familiar with. I locked the front door behind me, which triggered a question I needed an immediate answer to for my mental security. I texted Will. "Just checking, any chance the squatter has a key?" Will answered, "Nope, you and I have the only two." I examined my key. "Authorized copy, do not duplicate," was stamped across it. I nodded to myself, content. I went into the city for groceries and the household items that weren't already available to me. For good measure, I searched the whole house again when I returned. Still no squatters. After dinner, I watched a movie before turning in. I struggled to get comfortable in the unfamiliar bed. I woke frequently at any slight creak or bump from the house, but I still tried to sleep. My wife, ex-wife, had agreed to let me come see the kids the next day, and I didn't want to be tired and groggy for that. Around 2 a.m, I woke for the 5th or 6th time. My throat felt obnoxiously dry, so I got up for a glass of water. I walked slowly to allow my eyes to adjust in the strange house. I didn't dare turn on any lights and risk waking myself further. I dragged my fingers along the wall to keep myself moving straight until I entered the living room, where plentiful moonlight leaked through the blinds. From there, I went around the corner into the kitchen, just as the refrigerator door slammed shut. A gangly figure stood in front of the fridge, staring at me. We both froze in place. I could hear my own blood pumping behind my ears. Everything else in the house, in the world, seemed to go still. The shadowed man stood at least a head taller than me, but looked as thin as a 2x4. The hand in which he held one of the sodas I'd purchased looked unnaturally large, with fingers that wrapped all the way around the bottle and continued beneath his bony thumb. The arm hanging at his side hung too low. That hand dangled by his knee, and his hair, surely unwashed for weeks at least, looked like a soggy mop molding on his sunken skull. His deep eyes reflected the blue moonlight at me. They were his only expression of humanity. I can't tell you how long we stood like that, staring at each other, before the squatter juked past me. I cowered as he ran by. He left a sour stink in the air behind him. I yelled, "Get out of here! I'll call the cops!" The intruder went straight for the front door, swung it open, and disappeared through it. The resounding boom of that door slamming shut was like a hypnotist's fingers snapping me awake. I ran to a front window and looked out, but the man had vanished. I prayed he was running through the trees, putting distance between us and the locked door. In case the man had decided to lurk somewhere nearby, I called the police, then returned to the kitchen where I held a fire extinguisher like a shield until an officer arrived. He stayed outside until a second officer arrived. They told me to wait inside while they searched the property, guns drawn. Watching through a window, I could see the sweeping glow of both officers' lights, but neither moved with any excitement. "They'll find him hiding out there. I know it," I thought. But then one of the officers called to me. "You can come on out if you want. He's gone." That was not what I wanted to hear. The man had to be close by. Had the officers driven past him on their way in? Was he hiding somewhere else? Maybe just down the hill, waiting for them to leave? "Has this guy bothered you before?" the first officer asked as I joined them in the yard. The second officer got back in his cruiser and started working on his computer. I explained to both of them what I had been told about the squatter. "Huh," the second officer said. "I just pulled up this address. We've never been called here before." "No, that's not right," I argued. "The owner said you guys came out before and didn't find anything." The first officer, looking over the second's shoulder, said, "He's right, there's no call history." "Maybe it was another agency?" I suggested. The second officer shook his head. "We use a shared database. Nobody's come out here before tonight." He looked at me, daring me to keep arguing. The first said, "If it helps, we'll check the area on our way out, all right?" I did actually find this somewhat comforting and bid the officers good night. Of course, I could not go back to sleep. I spent much of the next day with my kids. My ex helped me take them to the park where she remained distant but within eyesight. We had a great time, and towards the end, Vanessa even helped us build a sandcastle in the volleyball pit. We all had a wonderful time that made me grateful for the chance to move down and be close to my family. I could not begin to entertain leaving the property which allowed me that chance, squatter or none. But I needed to be prepared. On the way back from seeing the kids, I picked up a box of bullets for Rip's gun. I didn't plan on carrying it around or anything, but I didn't think it would hurt to keep it loaded by my bed at night. An unsettling sight awaited me at the end of the driveway when I finally returned to the house. The crooked gable vent was lying on the grass in front of the door. It left a large circular hole in the front of the house, easily wide enough for a lanky nightmare man to slip through. I had not looked for any way into the attic the previous day. It just hadn't crossed my mind. I called Will from my car before jumping straight to the cops. I didn't want to bother them again for nothing.
"Hey, everything good? I heard the police were there last night,"
Will said when he answered. I replied, "Yeah, everything's fine, but how'd you hear about that already?" Will said,
"Oh, well, I guess I didn't hear about it, per se."
"The cameras," I concluded. Will's silence answered for him. I resolved to have a discussion with him about those cameras later on. The fallen gable vent didn't alarm Will in the slightest.
"Stuff's falling apart all over that place. The attic's just a bunch of crossbeams, ducts, and insulation, so there's not really enough space up there for somebody. The worst you have to worry about is birds. I'll have someone stop by and fix the vent tomorrow."
"Have the police ever checked the attic?" I asked, testing him.
Sure,
said Will.
Trust me, the police have searched every inch of that house before. That's probably why they were so quick to leave last night. I think they're starting to think this is some kind of hoax.
I said, you know, I meant to ask about that. The cops said they'd never been here before.
Well, I'm sure those two hadn't specifically,
said Will, his tone wanting to push the conversation away from this topic. I said, they told me their database had no record of any agency coming to this address. Dodging, Will said,
hey, I've only got a minute. I bet the wind just took that vent down. I'm just glad it didn't hit anybody when it fell, you know?
Me too, but did you hear what I said about the database?
Uh-huh, it's weird. I'll call them later and sort it out. I really gotta go, though. Text me if you need anything.
Will hung up. I got out and picked up the gable vent. Two screws, each half-eaten by rust, protruded from the back. I could see how the vent might have fallen off on its own, but I still intended to investigate the attic. Ever heard of the Denver Spider-Man? He was a guy who murdered a man, then lived in his attic for 9 months afterwards. That attic was no more than a crawl space and was filled with thousands of spiders. It's a true story, look it up. It happened just a handful of miles away, so the idea of my squatter hiding amongst some ducts and insulation wasn't too hard for me to believe. I went inside, leaving my unopened box of bullets on the kitchen counter. I found the scuttle door to the attic easily once I knew to look for it. It was just outside my bedroom. After I pulled up a chair from the dining room, I could reach it easily enough. I did not have a flashlight, nor did I know where to find one, so I prepared my phone light. The door slid away without any trouble, which had me worried it had been opened recently. A musk of insulation, treated lumber, and dust wafted down on me. There was something else, too. Something fungal is how I would describe it. It smelled like wet mushrooms, the sort of smell that might have been pleasant in the context of a nature hike, but set off alarms when pouring from the attic. The meaty mushroom odor grew until it overpowered the other smells. A hint of halitosis joined the mix, like I'd awoken the attic after a long, deep slumber, and it badly needed to brush its teeth. I stepped onto the chair and poked my head into the attic. I did not need my phone after all, thanks to the fallen vent. The pink hue of sunset shone through the opening like a spotlight. Its luminescence passing through the cotton candy tufts of insulation turned the whole attic pink, and there wasn't a spider in sight. I relaxed. Then, a board right behind my head creaked. Two sweaty hands coiled around my neck. The fingers overlapped, squeezing my throat from my collarbone to my jaw. The hands lifted me off the chair. I tried to raise my own hands to fight back, but the scuttle door constricted my shoulders. I felt stringy hair worming near my ear like trying to slither inside my head. Warm breath swam between the hairs on the back of my scalp. The stench of it filled my gasping mouth, swelling into my sinuses. On instinct, I snapped my head back and felt something soft crunch against my skull. Then I fell. My feet missed the chair. My head did not. I woke slowly, feeling as though I had entered a dream. Blurry whiteness with a black rectangle dominating the center hovered above me. And something else. Something shiny that caught and reflected the faintest traces of light coming from the windows. I inhaled, the breath struggling to reach my lungs through my swollen esophagus. My vision sharpened as I slowly resupplied my blood with oxygen. With new clarity, I recognized the shiny thing, although how it hovered above me remained a mystery. Rip's gun dangled just inches from my face. It hung perfectly in the air, pointed directly between my eyes. I tried to reach up and push it away, but my arms wouldn't respond. I could feel them, barely, but they felt cold and numb. I wondered how long I had been unconscious. As I managed to take deeper and deeper breaths, I felt my limbs slowly activating. I began actively tensing my muscles, trying to turn them all on before my attacker reappeared or the gun went off. Finally, I managed to lift my left arm off the floor. Before touching the mysteriously hovering gun, I rolled out from under it. I could now see the tiny thread suspending the gun from the scuttle door. It was tied around the trigger. Had I so much as bumped the gun, it would have fired straight into my brain. But no, I thought. I had left the gun in the shoebox without any bullets. I almost laughed. Yes, the squatter had gotten the drop on me, but his booby trap was a dud. I snatched the gun out of the air, and it blasted around into the floor. A cabinet slammed shut. Screeching like a demon, the squatter ran toward me from the kitchen. I must have been out long enough for him to find the bullets I'd brought home and load at least one into the gun. He pounced on me, wearing only a thick coat of dust. His tendril fingers clawed at me, grasping for my throat again. Crumbs from whatever he'd been gorging on sprayed into my face when he howled. I could barely fight back. My arms still felt slow, my legs heavy. Wherever I did manage to claw the squatter's skin, it tore with grotesque ease. Black blood oozed out of the tears, making my attacker slippery. The blood seeped into my clothes. It was cold. Tearing his skin did not slow the squatter down, but I could tell it hurt by his screams. The gun swung back and forth, just out of reach. The thread held the trigger back. Since the gun was semi-automatic, I knew if the trigger returned to its neutral position and there were more bullets in it, it would fire again. So, as I fought, I also had to stay out of the gun's swinging trajectory. When the opportunity arose, I jammed my knee into my attacker's exposed groin. He screamed and fell sideways. Scrambling, I caught the swinging gun by the barrel and pointed it at him. It did not fire. I racked the slide, ejecting a round that must have become jammed when the trigger didn't reset. A fresh bullet took its place. I aimed and sent that one into the coiled, bleeding body on the floor. Then the next. And the next. I pulled the trigger once more and heard a nearly silent click that was somehow louder than the shots which preceded it. The wounded squatter heard the click over his own howling. He stood, looking hellish with dark blood gurgling from his various wounds, and charged at me. I braced for impact. He shoved me before running past, through the house, and out the front door again. Outside, I heard something I almost didn't believe. A siren that whooped just once. I heard a car door slam, then a man shouting. Half dazed, I stumbled to one of the windows facing the front yard and saw, impossibly, a police cruiser parked at an angle in the driveway, red and blue lights flashing. An officer was stooped over a naked figure on the lawn. The figure lay deathly still. Half a dozen police officers arrived, plus an ambulance to take the body away. The body, which would later be identified as Will Buckley, my brief landlord. Apparently, while I was unconscious, he had used my phone to text a suicide note to both Rip and my ex-wife, both of whom called 911 immediately. I guess Will had wanted to stage my death to look self-inflicted, but why? He had obviously gone quite insane, but I felt there must be more to it. The way he had baited me into the attic and, going back further, all the lies he had told me to get me to the house, it all must have been for some purpose, right? Well, the answers might lie in Will's autopsy results. Due to his strangely elongated limbs and digits, as well as his just overall emaciated body, a team of doctors examined his corpse with great intrigue. It was their general consensus, that is to say, all of them agreed, that Will Buckley died from consuming copious amounts of concentrated bleach. Further complicating the results, all indications showed Will Buckley had been dead for over a week. Investigators pulled and combed the footage from all of Will's cameras. In total contradiction of what Will, or whoever I'd spoken to on the phone, said, the cameras contained hours of footage of Will walking and crawling through the house, sometimes just standing still for hours at a time, not even appearing to breathe. I've decided to leave the strange case of Will Buckley to the experts so that I can move on with my life. I found a job in Denver and moved into an ordinary apartment. I visit my kids at least a couple of times a week and help my ex drop them off and pick them up from school frequently. The new family dynamics are taking some getting used to, but I'm learning to accept them. I feel I've been gifted a second chance. One thing is crystal clear to me and Rip, the only person I still talk about those dark events with. Whatever possessed Will lured me to that remote house intentionally. It knew Will's rotting body would not last much longer. We think I was supposed to replace him. I want to believe all that horror is behind me now. I feel fine. I feel normal. But this morning, I put on one of my favorite hoodies before going on a walk at sunrise. I noticed the sleeves, which have always fit perfectly, felt just a little bit short. I'm telling myself it shrunk in the wash. I mean, it's possible, right? You made it out. Congratulations. If you enjoyed the story, please rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen. Reviews are the best way to support the podcast and help it grow. The next best way is to buy merch from thewarningwoods.myshopify.com. The link is also in the description below. If you want more creepy content, follow me on Instagram at thewarningwoods. If you feel ready, meet me here next week for another journey into the Warning Woods. Thank you for listening.
Every 5 minutes, a transplant candidate dies while waiting for a compatible heart, liver, or kidney. Imagine a technology that could provide those life-saving transplant organs for a high price, and imagine what a company would do to monopolize that technology. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists unlocks this holy grail of medicine by reverse engineering the genomes of all mammals, creating an animal with organs perfectly suitable for human transplantation. They envisioned a docile herd animal, but one team member had another, darker vision. This ancestor is anything but docile. The team's work spawns something big, something evil, something very, very hungry. Ancestor is a complete serialized fiction podcast by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler, with all episodes available. Binge the entire story now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.